upgrading your door security, and a DIY reality check up next on the Handy Guys Podcast.
Welcome to the Handy Guys Podcast, a podcast for handy guys from handy guys. Here are the handy guys themselves, Brian and Paul.
So, Brian, are you trying to tell me that home security systems are not enough to keep the bad guys out of your house?
The security system isn't going to keep them out. It's just going to, sound an alarm or alert you, if someone does break in. But how do you prevent them from breaking in the first place?
Yeah, I always wondered about just having the security system because they call you first a lot of times. They don't call the police. And if you're not there to pick up, there could be a lot of time that transpires before the criminal that's broken into your house gets to whatever they want to take and can get out of the house. And so, like you said, is it maybe perhaps better to hopefully prevent them from getting in the house in the first place?
Right, right. So I got an email from a guy named Nick at doordevil.com. And he was telling me all about security, and he sent us one of his products called Door Devil, which we'll talk about in a minute. But he said the top three DIY upgrades recommended by police to prevent to increase the security of your home, adding a second two-cylinder deadbolt, adding a peephole, and adding a door frame reinforcement device. So the idea is to, with the deadbolt, that helps with security of the door because that's the most likely point of entry if someone's going to break into your house.
Right.
And a door frame reinforcement, because if you ever looked at how doors are constructed, there's not a lot of wood or material in there along the strike plate where the door locks. So it's very easy to kick in and break in that way. And a peephole just allows you to obviously not open that door if someone's outside, before you check out who it is.
All right, so we're going to talk about this device to see if it makes sense for the typical homeowner. And we're also going to be talking about this little, what do you call this, a flow chart that you found?
Right, the DIY reality check.
And so this little flowchart is supposed to help me decide when I should do my next project or whether I should stop and not even think about doing it. Right.
I thought it was really neat. And it came from a website called Heat of Light. And we'll give out the URL for that a little bit later.
Heart of Light, you mean?
That's what I said.
Oh, I thought you said Heat of Light.
I probably did.
All right. We're going to talk about that. Heat of Light. And we'll also post this flowchart on our website. But it's supposed to tell you and help you decide whether you should proceed with a project or not. We're going to apply this flowchart to some of our real-life projects or potential projects in the home and see how it works out. And we'll do that after we provide our contact information.
I almost forgot, Paul.
What is our contact? You can email us, of course.
Yeah, email us, of course, us at handyguyspodcast.com or just go to our website, www.handyguyspodcast.com. Click on the Contact Us link at the top of the page and fill out the form.
Facebook. What about Facebook?
Facebook.com/TheHandyGuys.
The Handy Guys. What's Twitter?
Twitter.com/TheHandyGuys.
Right. No the. And the other thing, Brian, is that you can also sign up for our email list.
Yes.
Right on our page, handyguyspodcast.com. We're not going to spam you or do anything crazy, but on occasion, we are going to provide some freebies. We get some things from time to time. We're going to hand them out to our listeners.
You know, we've got those Milwaukee Sawzalls.
Exactly.
And they're collecting dust.
Right. We got to figure out what to do with that and other things. So sign up for our list. We're going to send out emails to you with special deals from us, like products we can provide you. And you need to be on that list. And are we still sending out, information on our various podcasts as well?
Right. We've stopped doing that on a weekly basis, and you'll get an occasional email with, the latest posts for the month or something like that.
Yeah, but we don't have time to spam you, so you won't get spammed from us.
We're busy enough.
Yeah, so sign up on that email list. We'd appreciate it. And that's about it. So let's talk about security in this flowchart right after this.
Got a project on your honey-do list? Let the Handy Guys know about it, and they may talk about it on their next podcast.
All right, Brian. So I was talking to a police officer a few years ago, and he told me the number one thing you can do to safeguard your home is to lock your door.
That's right.
You know, beyond, and that was interesting because he didn't say anything about a high tech security system or anything else. And I like that advice because, you know, as you know, Brian, I'm cheap and, you know,
right.
And the other thing, I'm always looking for solutions though. You know, it's like, it seems like the most complicated mousetrap is not the best mousetrap, right? Sometimes
absolutely.
It's a simple solution.
Right.
It's not expensive, but it works for the money you spend as right. well as any other. So I want to talk about whether this Door Devil product fits in that that arena. It's a product, you know, it's not going to cost you a monthly fee like a security
right.
system would.
Right.
And it's just a one-time deal. And after analyzing it, Brian, I checked it out. It's a simple install for the most part.
It is very simple. There's a few things we'll talk about you need to keep in mind. But yeah. essentially what the Door Devil is a door frame reinforcement. Right, I kind of mentioned that
yes.
at the beginning of the show. So the idea there is you're going to strengthen your door to prevent it from getting kicked in or pushed in.
And this door, it's kind of like a big door. What's the metal piece called? The
strike plate.
It's kind of like an oversized strike plate. It's what about 4 feet?
About 4 feet long,
and it has all the cutouts for your striker, for your deadbolt, and if you have a second deadbolt. You
right.
can also it would also fit. So it is set up so that it fits in your door, and it provides the additional strength. And it is, as I said before, easy to install. Essentially, it comes with 4-inch screws, I believe they are, and long screws, extra long. And the idea is to screw this thing not just into the door jamb, but into the supports, the 2x4s that are in the framing.
Right.
Yeah. So if you're going to kick your door down, you're going to have to rip out a bunch of long screws as well.
Right. And they even give you in the packaging screws for the hinges as well, because that's potentially a weak spot, because most hinges just have little, you know, 5/8-inch long screws, and that's not enough. You want to get at least one screw per hinge all the way into the framing, and that's a good practice in general. But this Door Devil kit comes with that as well.
So you can go to, doordevil.com, and you can purchase one of these units, or you can buy them in combinations. You get the units for two doors or three doors, and you get a discount. I think it's $70 or $80 per unit. So it's not dirt cheap, but it seems to be effective. And this product is made of a fairly thick steel.
Right, and that's good and bad. So let's talk about the bad on this.
Right. Well, let's talk about this product and how it would work in a typical homeowner and where perhaps it may not work.
Right. Exactly. So why don't you go into that?
Okay. Paul? Well, when I saw this product, I thought, wow, it's fairly clever. I could see how it would work, and it's easy. I have one problem, and that is my front door has the panel windows on each side of the door.
Yes.
So I could not put in a long screw without hitting that. It wouldn't be framing. It would be windows or the supports
right.
around it, and it's a very thin wood. So I don't have the benefit of being able to screw into framing.
But it works great on my garage door.
Right. I could see you have a—
I've got a man door on the side of the garage.
Right. So there, it would be great.
It's perfect for that.
A home that didn't have these window panels on each side of the door, it would work fine. The home I grew up in, I can imagine it would be perfect for that. So I could see, and it's easy to install. However, there's one other caveat.
That's right, and it says it clearly in the instructions.
Yes, it does, which we discovered after I realized it wouldn't fit on my door for a second reason, and that is there is not enough clearance between the door itself and the jamb. So in other words, the door fits almost perfectly with just enough space to make the clearing and shut. Maybe you could...
Right.
Fit a penny in there, tops.
Right. Well, the instructions say if you can fit two dimes,
okay.
Inside, you know, between the door and the frame, you'll have enough room for the Door Devil jam reinforcement kit. So that's your check. If you can get two dimes in there, you're good to go. Go ahead and order them.
Perfect. So they give you the gauge there.
Right.
To figure out if it's going to fit.
If it doesn't fit and you want to use it, it's a little more complicated of an install. You may have to, they suggest using a router and routing out and recessing the strike plate or this Door Devil reinforcement plate into the jamb itself. and that could get a lot more complicated. It's kind of beyond the scope of what we're discussing here.
No, I know the founder of this company, his name is Tom, referenced a couple of incidents that happened on a street where the
Tom,
house
Nick. It's Tom and Nick.
Oh, Tom and Nick.
They both own
right.
the company.
They referenced an incident where a door was knocked down and items were stolen from the house, even though they had a home security system. So they're right. in and out of the house so fast. And we've had that same thing happen, or we had happen in our neighborhood. Fortunately, the person's been put away for a long time, where they were running, actually while people were still home at night, breaking in or just finding open unlocked doors and coming in and just stealing purses and wallets and things like that for pocket change.
Right.
But there's not a whole lot left to steal in homes anymore, Brian, right? You don't keep a big wad of money in your home, do you?
I'm not saying. It's a security issue.
But if you can, this is a great way to just prevent that from happening. They can't knock the door down. And so there you have it.
You do have to remember to lock it, though.
Yeah, you do have to lock the door. It's a good point, or else they'll just open the door.
Right.
Now, there are a couple things to point out in the installation. You mentioned the dimes. You should also point out that when you're putting in screws of this length, you want to make sure you put in pilot holes or you're going to easily strip those screw heads.
But you know what? They give you the right size drill bit in the kit for the pilot hole. So that's,
oh, perfect.
Yeah, it's great. And the other thing they give you in the kit is a window sticker. So you can put that on, or a sticker you can put on your door right where someone would potentially kick. And so it would say, hey, this door is reinforced, so you know maybe they'll move on to your next door neighbor's house.
So you're daring them to knock down your door.
Right.
Well, they're probably not going to be too successful. So this is a product if you want to look at. We've talked about security products in the past. So if you don't want to get into all the gadgets and this and the expenses and the electronics and running the stuff yourself, here's a quick item you can install. And
One product I want to look at down the road, Paul, speaking of gadgets, and it kind of fits into this, is there's a company out there that actually has an electronic deadbolt, but that's tied into a home security system, so you can lock it and unlock it remotely.
Oh, cool.
And so I want to look into that as well, and that would probably work with the Door Devil.
There you go. All right. Well, up next, we're going to talk about this do-it-yourself reality check flowchart.
Want great deals on tools that the handy guys recommend? Click on the Our Store button at www.handyguyspodcast.com.
That's the instructions.
It says, do I have detailed list of supplies and instructions? No or yes. Add up your supply costs? Is it actually cheaper than purchasing the items?
You know, I've got a great example of this from last week.
Well, sorry, pardon us. We're just talking about this DIY reality check.
Did you start the recording already?
Yes, I did. I want the listeners to just listen in to what we're going through. We're looking at this DIY, do-it-yourself reality check. It is a little flow chart that we'll post on our website. We have permission.
Right. It came from heartoflight.blogspot.com. That's H-E-A-R-T, heart-of-light. blogspot.com is where we got it, and thanks to Rachel, she said we could use it.
So this is a good flow chart, and I think you need to think through this. And if you don't have this exact flow chart, you need to have a flow chart in your head.
Okay, so those listening on iTunes and so forth, make sure you print out this flow chart so you have it in front of you as we're discussing
this. You don't even need to have it in front of you. We'll go through it. But the instructions are to make a list of all the projects that you're considering. Mm-hmm. Then you run those projects one by one through the flow chart, and you cross off the projects that fail. So this is supposed to, I guess, help you prioritize and determine which of the projects you should even proceed on.
Right, around your house. So we just talked about Door Devil. You could run the Door Devil reinforcing your door jams through this flowchart. I have a great example of building some picnic tables last weekend that would...
All right, let's do the Door Devil real quick. Do you have the skills in this area? Can you put screws in and pilot holes?
Yes.
Yes. Do you have detailed list of supplies and instructions? Well, it comes with all the supplies.
Yes.
And the instructions. So, yes. Then it says, add up your supply costs. Is it actually cheaper than purchasing the items? Well, you would have to purchase someone to install it is what they're getting
right,
at.
Or you'd have to purchase the steel and mill it and, manufacture the piece.
So, definitely is cheaper. So, yes. Am I going to need help? You're going to need help installing that?
No.
So estimate how much time this project will take. Double it. Am I okay with spending this much time on this project? So
an hour, an half an hour.
So you got to double it. So it's an hour.
An hour.
So it says, yay, go for it.
All right.
So you've made it through the flow chart using the door devil.
Okay.
All right, now.
But talk about my picnic tables. You want to run those through?
Yeah, let's run your picnic table project through this flowchart.
All right, so all right. I built 6 picnic tables last weekend.
Okay, do you have the skills in this area?
Well, yes.
You do. Do you have a detailed list of supplies and instructions?
Yes.
How do you? Where's your list of supplies? Did you come up with it on your own?
Or yes.
You draw out the design of these picnic tables?
Me and another guy did, yeah. It was just kind of written on a scrap of paper, but yeah.
Okay. Redwood?
No.
Cedar?
No.
Pine?
Yes.
Okay. You didn't do it out of cedar?
No.
It's not under a roof for these picnic tables that are exposed?
No, it was pressure treated.
Oh, pressure treated. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're so far add up your supply costs. Is it actually cheaper than purchasing the items?
That's where we deviated from the flowchart. We did not add up the supply cost. So when I sent the guy to get the materials, he bought everything we needed to build the picnic tables, and on his way out of the home center, he noticed out of the corner of his eye picnic tables, just like the ones we were building.
I hate when this happens.
For $88 a piece, and we were at a supply cost of about $90 to $100 per table.
But problems could be. I'm not saying it's the case. You know, those tables may use cheap hardware, perhaps.
Perhaps.
You don't know if the joints are done as well as what you're going to do. Or then again, maybe you should have just bought them.
We should have just bought. Now, it would have been it's a lot easier to get a stack of lumber into a pickup truck than it is to get 6 picnic tables into a pickup truck.
Right. True.
Right.
That's
we would have had to make 3 trips. The store was 40 minutes away.
It could have been coated in lead stain from
yeah.
Giant. No.
Who knows what it would. But we had fun building them, so that was the good part.
Right. So interesting. So you do need to ask that question. In most cases, your costs are going to be lower. And when you get into building furniture and things, it's kind of frustrating because you want to do something your own, and you look at it, and furniture and such, things like that, you can find so cheaply these days. It's hard to beat the price.
Okay. So, yeah, you're right, Paul. I mean, I've built some furniture, you know, and I kind of go on the high end, right? So I'm using, you know, high-end materials, you know, sometimes even exotic woods and things like that. You know, and this isn't a woodworking show. You got to go to woodwhisperer.com for that. But, you know, I can make a sofa table and it costs me, you know, $100 plus in materials, but I could go to, you know, IKEA and buy one for $39, right? Well, I think mine's a little better.
Right.
And so maybe the same held true with the picnic tables. At least that's what I'm telling myself.
All right. So the next item on our flowchart is, am I going to need help?
In my picnic table case, yes.
To do that many in a reasonable amount of time, we'll
right.
say
it
yes.
It was a 2-person job, yep. Big pieces of wood.
Have I already enlisted the helpers?
Yes.
All right, so estimate how much time this project will take. Double it. Did you have to? Did you get it?
We didn't estimate it. You know,
do you think it went twice as long?
No,
as
it was. Maybe took 4 hours, 5 hours.
Yeah,
total,
that is
over a couple of days.
It always does take double the amount of time. It seems.
I don't know about that.
Yay, go for it. There you go.
Right.
All right. So here.
Or if you hit one of those no's, then it's stop and walk away from the project.
We were talking about a project earlier. I'll run it through again.
Okay.
I have a project where I want to build shelves in my small laundry room above. I have a front loader that's already on top of those shelves that you can get with them. Pedestals.
Right, front loader, washer, and dryer.
So they're
right.
already high up in the air. It's awkward. It's not a good situation here. It's a narrow laundry room. But anyway, we're going to try to put some shelves in there at some point. Do I have the skills in this area? Yes. I can do the shelves.
You can build shelves. It's easy enough, right?
Do I have a detailed list of supplies and instructions?
No, you...
No.
Oh.
I don't have a list. I could come
you
up with a list.
You have a detailed list.
Here's the problem, Brian. Right. I want a good design here. I want it to flow right. I want it to be workable from people that aren't as tall as myself, possibly. And so at this point, while I could come up with a detailed list of supplies and instructions, it wouldn't necessarily be for the design I want.
It wouldn't be necessarily the right detailed list.
Correct. So we'll say no there.
So you don't have a detailed list of supplies right. and instructions because you don't know exactly what you want to build.
That's right.
You need some plans.
We need a buzz. Oh, that was good. All right. So we got
you need a what?
A buzz. You know,
Oh, okay.
Did you hear that?
No.
Oh, I'll play it again. There we go.
All right.
So, So now the next item is, can I figure it out on my own without numerous trial and error purchases? Well, that's my concern. I don't want to go out and make trial and error purchases. So I'm going to say no here because I want an expert to tell me, okay, this is what you need to think about.
It's shelves in your laundry room, Paul.
It should be simple, but you know, it's not just going to be junk that's put on these shelves. We're going to have serving dishes and it's got to look nice.
Serving dishes in your laundry room?
This isn't your tip. Yeah.
You're not just going to put a couple of bottles of soap up there and a jar to put the change from your pocket and whatever in there?
It's going to be a nice layout because we have lots of things that go in there because there's not enough room in the kitchen for them. But anyway, so this says no, stop. Absolutely stop. So my question is this a hard stop? Don't even ever consider it? Or perhaps I just need to find that person that's going to help me with the design and I can restart the flowchart.
That's right. If you do find, you know, you get to that stop block on the flowchart, then you need to realize what caused that stop and correct that problem, right?
Right.
So in your cases, you don't have a good design figured out and therefore you can't create your list of materials. You don't want to do trial and error purchases and try things and throw them away and try something else. So stop until you get that stuff figured out. And then, just like you said, you can kind of restart through that flowchart.
But what's helpful about this flowchart, Brian, is that I have the skill to put up all kinds of shelves.
Sure.
But
or
I
even build shelves.
Yeah, build shelves,
from
buy
scratch.
Shelves, wire
you
shelves,
could start
wood
with,
shelves.
You could start with a log and end up with decent shelves.
That's right. I can mill my own wood.
Right.
But I don't want to do that, all that work that's involved, and then find out, oh, I wish I had done it a little differently. So I'm going to hold out, look for that expert advice, perhaps, to give me the knowledge that I need to help me with those supplies and instructions, and then get restarted.
You know, I built a home office that's been kind of the first home office I had. And the company I was working for at the time actually paid for a design consultant.
Oh, that's what I need.
Right?
You got the number, phone number there?
It was someone with Herman Miller, actually.
Oh, okay. Oh, we'll forget that.
Right.
I'll flunk the supply costs.
Right. It was top of the line primo stuff.
Right.
But it was really interesting. The methodology that they used was similar to maybe what you're going to need to go through. It was, you know, do I have a fax machine and then measure it?
Right.
Right. Do I, you know, basically a list of every single thing in my office and measurements. How many,
cool.
Right down to how many pencils and pens and computers and laptops and measurements and, you know, how big is the monitor and you know, how many files do I need to store? And they ran all that through and then they came up with a design that would accommodate it, that included cabinets and shelves and storage and filing things and the chairs and the surface area and the whole nine yards. And you kind of are going to go through the same process.
Well, you know, I've seen some designs at surface value work great for a laundry room. And they're similar to, if you've ever seen, where you have cabinets above the refrigerator and you have a panel on one side and the cabinet is out to the front so that it's right above the refrigerator. So there's a gap between the back of the cabinet and the wall so that you can reach the cabinet. Have you ever seen a setup like that?
So you can reach the cabinet.
Yeah, so
on
one side.
Explain that again, Paul. I missed it.
So on one side of your refrigerator, there may be actually like it's a finished piece of essentially plywood.
That goes floor
wall,
to ceiling,
floor,
right?
And
that holds the side of the cabinet.
It holds the
up.
Side of the cabinet, and the cabinet oftentimes are out towards the front of that. So there's actually, because cabinets are typically, 15 inches deep or something like that?
Yeah, it depends,
where your refrigerator can be 30 inches deep, and they will actually place them so that the cabinets are out in front.
Forward.
So they're more reachable. Well, I've seen some laundry designs that are like that, where you put in a board on the one side of your laundry and put cabinets across. It looks great. The problem is, I have a very narrow laundry room, and if I put something up like that, how am I ever going to service
right.
the
you
washing
won't be able
machine?
To, and you won't be able to get the doors
I
open on the cabinets.
Actually, there's enough room to get the doors open the cabinets, but I would never be able to move the washer and dryer. It would be stuck in there.
Right.
And
right.
So, because, you know, normally if the laundry room was bigger, you could pull them out, but you won't be able to do that. If you pull them out, they'll hit the other wall.
Right.
So,
right.
That's the typical design for my setup, but it just doesn't work.
You know what I did? I went to a building supply. Actually, I sent my wife.
I was gonna look
to a building supply auction.
It's this week.
Is it this week?
Yeah. I can't go this week, though. Next month.
And for $10, she got a cherry cabinet that was, you know, it must have not fit in the space or something, and some builder dropped it off. So she won the auction for $10.
Right.
And I just screwed it to the wall.
I might do something similar to that, actually, with wall cabinets and not worry about the fact that some members of the family can't reach them, you know?
I put it in a little bit lower than you'd install a cabinet typically. But we're not storing a lot of stuff in there. We're storing, laundry soap.
Do you have the pedestals on your washer and dryer?
No.
So those are lower. So I may.
That's a
challenge of this. I have the pedestals, and some people like them because the kids can get to them and they can put their summer towels in there. But anyway, if you have any great ideas for design for laundry room, send them along to us at handyguyspodcast.com.
Sure, yeah.
I'll be thinking about it. Maybe if I come up with a good design and build it, we'll include it in one of our podcasts.
Yeah, definitely.
Also, if you have a Moen, a faucet for your kitchen sink with one of those pull-out hoses and sprayers, and it foams up and makes an oily smell, send us an email. I'm working on that one. I think I might have a solution.
Okay, that's a curious one.
It's a very odd one. It's a very strange one I've been dealing with for a year.
Moen faucet.
Moen faucet, it might do it with Dellas, but the Moen faucets, the newfangled ones with a pull-out head.
Where the entire faucet pulls out,
and
you fill up your glass, and it's foamy kind of oily smelling.
Yeah, when you first use it, and if you haven't used it in a day, or in some cases just an hour, it comes out like a foam, almost as much as like a beer foam, and yet it has an oily smell. Get that. That's really odd.
Very, very weird.
Yep. And I think I might have the answer. We're going to probably have another Handy Guys TV episode showing it.
Look forward to it.
That's all we got this week for the Handy Guys podcast. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.
Bye.
The Handy Guys will be back next week. Same handy time, same handy website.